Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I am your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my marvelous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you today, Matt?
I'm good.
That's good. I'm also good.
I have my Hellboy RPG here. It's the one from like 20 years ago.
Oh, nice.
The GURPS one. And they've been, I guess, they're releasing one for 5e.
Yes.
And it's weird to look and realize I don't know how much. I haven't read an issue of Hellboy in a long time. I don't know how much the story has advanced since this one came out. So, yeah, it's interesting to think about.
And which is also interesting because I just ordered the Hellboy board game from Mantic because I wanted the minis and the game looks absolutely hysterically fun. And hysterically as much as a Hellboy game can be fun. But we're not here to talk about Hellboy, although we could, but we can talk about that later. We're here to answer your questions about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. And today we are going to be doing just that. We have several questions from all of you out there, a couple carryovers from last week. We appreciate you sending those in. Again, if you have questions for this podcast or the other podcast or the queue, you can send them in. We do have two channels dedicated to it on the Blizzard Watch Discord server. We do look at the patron and supporter one first for obvious reasons, but we do check the other ones, which, again, these are from all over the place. If Discord's not your thing and you want to go ahead and send us an email, you can send it to us at podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Without further ado, let's start this off with the first question, which is actually three parts. Question for Lore Watch from Cuervos, Elemental Shaman in Argent Dawn EU. Hello, Watchers. Based on the fact that Nathanos is killed by the PC in the pre-patch, three outcomes have to come to mind. Mild spoilers there, but I think that was pretty much apparent for everybody that's been paying attention. We never hear from him again. He's done the Hasta la Vista, baby. He comes back in Shadowlands, and killing him was part of a strategy made by Sylvanas, so he is still a bad guy. Three, he comes back in Shadowlands, but as he will not be an undead anymore, probably, he comes around about what he's done and will in fact help us take down Sylvanas as a redemption arc. Please share your thoughts on which you think is more likely to happen, or maybe you think something else entirely may happen. Keep the good work.
I've actually recoiled in horror at the very idea of a redemption arc for Nathanos.
You know what's funny, though? Like, you're recoiled by it, but this is something I was actually kind of wondering about.
Before you say that, let me explain my thinking here. Have you guys ever played Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2?
I have, extensively.
Do you remember the line where Kreia says, "Redemption is a kind of spiritual collapse, a fall that few recover from"?
Mm-hmm.
That's Nathanos. I don't think... not everybody can be redeemed. Some characters, in order to have a redemption arc, there needs to be willingness. And it needs to be from your own actions and choices, not, I got killed, so now I feel bad. I don't know how else to explain it.
Killed is not a magical salve that purges a person of all the bad choices they've made, is what you're basically implying.
Yeah, and also, I don't think Nathanos is never, like, his choices have never been, you know, you can't blame the things people do on them being undead. Being undead is a horrible thing to endure, absolutely. But it doesn't make you do awful things. And Nathanos is just, if we leave aside the awful acts he has committed, he's just an unpleasant person. And that's okay. Some people are unpleasant people. They don't all have to be good people. Sylvanas is a lot more depth in that regard, but Nathanos has never been presented as anything but a thoroughgoing jerk. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, he's just terrible. He's terrible to his own people, even. He's terrible to the people he works with. He's terrible to everyone but Sylvanas. He is essentially her dog.
He is.
That likes just her, and that's it. I'm much more comfortable with two, because I've fought from the beginning. I've thought that he was that his getting himself killed was going to be the easiest way for him to get to the Shadowlands. You know, it's not like he's got access to a giant portal, so if he wants to get there, well, there's one really surefire way to get there, isn't there?
Yep.
So yeah, that part I can see, but I'm going to shut up now so you can talk. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I just had
And that's perfectly fine. And that's something that this is the reason I've been thinking about this isn't so much that I think that he's going to get a redemption arc, but it raises a lot of questions, because while there was a plan in place, did Sylvanas's plan include him after this? She had to have known that he was going to be killed or whatever the case is, and he had to know that as well, but did they know the aftermath of it? And that is the $1 million question. It also, after playing through a bunch of the Shadowlands stuff, there's this weird disconnect where does Nathanos go? Is he in the Maw? Is his soul weighed from his actions before he was raised as an undead? Before he was a member of the Scourge? Or is it everything that happened from between then and now? Is there a piece of him that was lost when he became Scourge? Which, this is a question we don't know the answer to still.
That's actually interesting to think about. I'm not interrupting you. Continue to go. You just gave me an idea.
Yeah, because this is something I've been thinking about too, especially since we were talking about how a lot of these zones, a lot of these areas in the Shadowlands require you to make a sacrifice, whether it is a piece of your hubris, your sin, whether it is your pride, or whether it is your memories, whether it is your identity. There's always a piece of you that gets stripped away. And even in Ardenweald, which is like the cycle of rebirth, and there's a lot of functions that push you back into the world, you're no longer the person you were, potentially. There are maybe some exceptions. Ardenweald gets really weird with the whole Wild One, Wild Gods thing and stuff like that. And Loa as well. That's also hanging out in the back of my mind. But it's a question of when the Scourge were killed. We know that the Machine of Death wasn't broken yet. Did part of their souls get carried over? When they were shoved back into their bodies, even as the Scourge, was it just a piece of animating force that was shoved in there? Is there a possibility that, in the case of Nathanos, there are two parts of him running around? We know that... I guess the question is whether his raised life was a new life with just the memories of his old self. So I've been wondering if when he gets there, or if he gets to the Shadowlands, if there's another version of him that Sylvanas didn't account for, or if there's another piece of him that when he gets pushed back into there doesn't necessarily...
Think about what you're saying, though. Think about what you're saying. If everything you just postulated is true, and there is another Nathanos waiting there, why wouldn't there be another Sylvanas waiting there?
I was also going to get to that. But that's the other thing too, because now we have Sylvanas, and now we have the whole Arthas thing. Is he split? There's a lot of possibilities here for it. Now, as far as going back to the whole Nathanos thing, I don't think it's possible that he's going to magically become a good guy. I think that the most that we could possibly see as a deviation from I'm going to be a bad guy continued still, and this is part of our grand scheme, is that Sylvanas forgets him. Sylvanas doesn't need him anymore. And when he presents himself to her in the Shadowlands, because she has no need for him, she rejects him out of hand again. Because remember, she doesn't want to feel, she doesn't want to, you know, have these weird mortal attachments anymore. He is one of those things. She loved him in life. and that carried over a little bit into Unlife. So if she's trying to sever all of that and she does that with him, I don't think he becomes a good guy. I think maybe he finds a way to, I don't know, pull the rug out from under her at a certain moment. And that's the best that I think you could hope for. I don't think he's going to become an Errol Flynn swinging in, you know, I'm here to save the day because I repent for everything horrible I've done. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah, I just find myself wondering if I don't think we're going to get the thing you just suggested. I don't think we're going to get it because I don't think as a narrative device that people would get it.
I agree.
So I don't think we're going to see two Sylvanuses or two Nathanoses or anything like that. But
parts of their essence might be there.
No, see, this thing again, if you do the thing where, well, this is a part of their essence, if you make it anything other than, like, you know, a light bulb they find and touch and for a moment have a flashback,
yeah,
then it wouldn't work because people would never accept it. I keep going back to Warlords of Draenor. People were very confused by it. The fact that it wasn't mainstream time travel, that it was an alternate reality, people did not get it.
Oh, agreed. Yeah.
And if you put people in a position of, like, you know, okay, this is a part of Sylvanas that's wandering around and, like, you know, she can confront it. They won't accept it. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I honestly think it would be interesting. Another thing that would be interesting would be to speculate that straight up, no Forsaken, no Undead, no Scourge have a soul.
Mm-hmm.
Their souls are gone. That's, in fact, the source of their torment. Their soul is already left.
And that they're just pure anima or something like that.
You know, they're just, they not even pure anima. They're not anima. That's why their existence is horrible.
Yeah, because
they exist, but they don't have the spark of life. They don't have a soul. They don't have the things that make a living being what it is. But they have a brain, and the brain is trying to, you know, go without it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of ways you could go with it. I don't think they're going to do them because in the end, it would be a really neat way around all this if at the end Sylvanas' soul is put back into her body and she's a living person again. I don't expect that that's going to happen because it would be too neat and people would be like, what? No.
Yeah.
And it comes back around to, like, a lot of these ideas are cool. Like, I mean, I've been a big supporter of making Sylvanas actually be alive again. So she'd have to face all the things that she did while she was undead. Now, if her soul has been out of her body the whole time, basically it's in an afterlife right now. And then, you know, you have to be confronted with what your body did in your name. And you're like, but I was here. You know, I wasn't, you know, I don't know if you, we're going back to comic books again. Have you ever read the comic book Quiver? The Green Arrow one, yeah, that Kevin Smith wrote?
Yeah, oh yeah.
When Hal Jordan decided he was going to recreate Ollie Queen.
Yes.
But he did it without his soul, which was up in heaven the whole time.
Yep.
And eventually they had to put the soul back in the body in order to save Ollie's son from a guy who was going to steal his body and go around doing horrible things. I find myself, like, you know, that's a story that would be very interesting, but I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think they're going to do anything that makes it so that the people who are acting aren't the people.
Yeah,
in any way.
And I agree.
And that's, but that being said, I absolutely don't think we're never going to hear from Nathanos again. That just no way.
It's impossible.
Especially not in this expansion. This is not the expansion where killing somebody gets rid of them. It's like, okay, so he's dead. Whoopee. That's like, there's a big rip in the sky where the dead are, you know, coming through. I'm not sure that this is a particularly effective strategy for dealing with him. It would have been more effective to actually lock him up somewhere, because then he'd be locked up and he couldn't do anything, you know. But, you know, this way he's ranging around the maw. I expect it's either going to be two or a variety of three closer to the one you talked about. Like, I don't think it would need to be that he has a soul fragment. I think you could literally just have him get to the maw and Sylvanas is just like, doesn't even, like, he's going, my, you know, my queen, and she just walks away and leaves him. And then later on, he breaks out of the maw and goes for vengeance for her having, you know, broken his heart and abandoned him. That I could see. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's what's going to happen. Because I don't know that Sylvanas would do that, just because she's not really one to waste raw material. And Nathanos has more often than not has proved useful. I mean, yes, he didn't successfully kill Bwon Zamdi, but he's done a lot of other things for her. You know what I mean? So I'm not sure.
But
I lean towards two. I do think, however, it would be interesting if they did come out and say that there's, when you die like that, when you die and become undead, a piece of you is left behind. I think that would be interesting.
And I
would like to see stuff with it. I just don't expect it.
Yeah, I don't expect it, but I think that this is one of those rare opportunities that they could try to get a little metaphysical with it and go a little bit of the philosopher route more so than anything, because one of the things that I see stressed in a lot of these zones is that this isn't the mortal world, right? Like, this isn't the world we know. Everything says that to you at some point. You know, time has no meaning. Our sins don't have any meaning. Who we were has no meaning, whatever the case is. This is a new fantastical realm where we don't know all the rules. And so we could start to learn more about it, especially as we start to learn more about how the Helm of Domination was crafted, how Frostborn was crafted, how that actually, like, interacts with what happened with the whole coming about of the Lich King in the first place. Like, we know we're going to find out about that, but it would be interesting if in the course of that, we find out more about the Scourge itself. Because one thing, like, if you go around Maldraxxus, there's a whole lot of, like, this is proto-Scourge. This is what the Scourge is templated after, right? Like, the weird abominations, the weird soul stitching, all these things that the Lich King did, there's always like a little piece of it that's like, oh, I could see where he got the idea from it. I could see where he got the idea from it. And there are things that look like they belong almost to the original Scourge. They're almost like mindless carrion in Maldraxxus. Maybe there's more to it. And I would love to see something that goes into that a little bit more. Again, don't know if we're ever going to get that, but I personally would like to see something more about it because it is a rare opportunity for them to flesh out something that I don't think they've ever had an opportunity to even attempt at fleshing out before outside of something like Chronicle. All right, I think we've answered that one pretty good, so we'll move on to the next one. Question for Lorewatch. Recently, I've completed Ahead of the Curve, and in doing so received the Uncorrupted Voidwing. The quest has you taking the Drake to Rathion, who uncorrupts it and gives it back to you to take care of. This got me thinking of drakes, whelplains, and dragons. Are my mounts and pence sentient dragonkin like the ones who take on human form from time to time, or just primal beings? Is there something that separates the different dragons, proto-drakes excluded, from being like the ones that interact with people, or is it similar to Goofy and Pluto where, yes, they are exactly the same, and no, we don't talk about it? Sincerely, Flanageddon. What do you think?
Yes, they're exactly the same, and no, we don't talk about it. I mean, there's nothing in-game that... In-game, in fact... When you get the nether drakes the first time, you are explicitly told that these are just dragons, that they are members of the Dragonflight that are... The thing is you don't own that drake. That drake is helping you. The in-game fiction of the nether drake is that the nether drake is assisting you. Not that it is your... It's not like you're... In real life, if one owns a horse, one owns the horse. One puts the horse in a stable... One feeds the horse, one cleans up after the horse. That is not the case for a drake mount. The drake mount is a drake. It's letting you ride on its back to get places, but it is not your drake. You do not own it. It is not a slave. It could choose not to take you someplace, again, in the fiction of the game. It's just, that's how that works. It gets kind of weird when you start getting into mounts that are like, you know, corrupted void dragon or what have you, then you start getting into weird stuff. But yeah, the whelps and drakes are just dragons. They're not semi dragons. They're not, you know, again, proto drakes, it's different because proto drakes are not fully sapient beings. And there's a difference between sapience and sentience. Your dog that you own right now is sentient. It has senses and it can sense the world around it. That's the case for anything that's sentient. Sentience does not indicate sapience. They are different qualities. Sapience is the quality of being able to think.
Yeah, it's like wisdom, right, essentially.
It's reason. You know, thinking man who thinks. Homo sapiens sapiens. Sapiens is the ability to think. Now, we're learning that possibly there are more things that are sapient than we understand. But for purposes of the discussion, you could have a sentient anything. Like, any animal is sentient. The most animals, and some things that are not even considered animals, like fungus and plants, can respond to the world around them. They can understand more than just pre-programmed stuff. It's established that some plants have, when they're damaged, release a chemical into the air that other plants can detect and will respond to. They'll change the way they are as much as they're able to avoid harm.
Yeah.
So that's a sentient response. It doesn't have a nervous system. It doesn't have a brain, but it does have the ability to detect those chemicals and change. It has the ability to sense the world around it. That's sentience. Now, we can go back and forth on this. And this is a lore show and not Matt Rossi ineptly discusses, you know, qualities of psychology and thought. However, in terms of what we're talking about in the game, yes, your Drake mount is just a Drake like any other Drake. It is not a special Drake that isn't as smart as the other Drakes. This isn't what we, you know, this is not remedial school for Drakes. Your Drake is as smart as any other Drake. It is in fact an intelligent being. It is carrying you because it chose to.
Yeah,
in the fiction of the game.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that they've never really explained in game, and it's one thing that they've never explained that really out of game. And it's, I guess, one of those things where, for the most part, it's just sort of choose your own adventure as far as what you believe actually happens to these, like, mounts that you collect. Because at the end of the day, you are literally a hero character in a high fantasy world carrying around 500 mounts in your pocket. I choose to think of it more as you have ways to summon magical creatures, essentially, whether they beckon to your aid or are constructs in the terms of, like, the arcane constructs that the mages summon, or, you know, elementals that are brought up from the planes in the terms of, like, shamans bring up, or dragons that are, you know, coming to your whistle because you punched them and they respect you. There's many ways to justify it, but Matt has the right of it. In every aspect I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just going to point out, when you get your Netherwing Drake, this is the quest text.
Yep.
And this quest text is from the Drake that you will be riding. It is an honor to meet you, Name. We have all been keeping a close eye on your adventures and are grateful for all you have done for the Netherwing Drake of Dragonflight. If you choose me as your compatriot, I will fly you to the ends of this world and back. Whatever it is you ask of me, I will do my best to comply. Be warned that you may only select one of us for your journeys in Outland. Once the selection has been made, you cannot change your mind. So, in the game's fiction, that Netherwing Drake is an intelligent being who is choosing to ferry you around. Now, not every mount has a quest involved in it, so you don't get you don't actually have the mount giving you a quest to get it, but like you did with the Netherwing. But again, in the fiction of the game, Drakes are intelligent beings, and if you are riding around on one, you're riding around on an intelligent being. Now, yep. They don't. Now, for instance, if you get the Drake mount off of Deathwing, there's two of them actually, the Blazing Drake and the other one. They basically look like Alexstrasza. They're like Alexstrasza Drakes. There's absolutely nothing explaining what that Drake is, how you got it, and why it's letting you ride around on it. There's just, it's there and you have it. There's no quest where the Drake is like, thanks for saving me. I know all those other Drakes were corrupted by Deathwing, but I managed to not be corrupted, and now I'll help you out. Nope, there's nothing. You just got it.
Again, but it's a game. There's going to be some things we have to sort of...
Anixian Drake, no explanation to why you have an Anixian Drake. There's just, it's there. And this also goes for like, you know, battle pet whelps. There's nothing... There's no, like, I don't think there's a single quest in the game where one of the whelps is like, I'll help you out for a while by beating up on, like, squirrels. Because that could happen. You could definitely be using an old Dragonflight Drake team against squirrels. It could happen. I love pet battles sometimes. But yeah, there's nothing about it in the game. You just kind of have to go with it. Just roll with it, man, because that's where we are.
All right, moving on to our next one, because I don't think there's much more we can get out of that one for now. This
I'm just imagining whelplings fighting squirrels.
Yeah, just the super animosity. I will help you. I hate squirrels.
These guys are jerks.
This one comes from our friend Tetsemi. From quest text in Venthyr quest area, the Ember Ward, is a land of madness and torture. Blighted by the light, the master sends his most hated enemies there to suffer unending agony. Would you speculate that this is an unintended side effect due to how the light affects the dead, i.e. Forsaken, or Venthyr specifically? Or did someone weaponize the light, capital L, again? I haven't gotten through a whole bunch of the Venthyr area yet, so I'm going to rely on you if you have anything for this one.
I think it's basically... we've already seen that the light is very much a thing in Bastion. So I don't think that the light just affects the dead. That's not the case here. Bastion is absolutely chock full of the light, and it's not a problem for the dead there. I think it's definitely related to the Venthyr themselves. Now, keep in mind that the Holy Light affects the Forsaken when it's used to heal them. It does. Forsaken can go out in a day just fine, and Forsaken can channel the light. I keep going back to, like, you know, that particular Scourge, whose name is, at the moment I'm forgetting, but he's one of the Four Horsemen. Zeliak. So Zeliak was powerful enough to control the light while he was dead. I definitely think that the Holy Light has a problem with Forsaken, but it doesn't have the problem with the dead. I mean, Calyamenethil, dead as they get. And just jam full of the light. She's, like, just walking around with it. I think it's a more sophisticated thing than that. But I definitely think it has a problem with... The Venthyr have a problem with it. And I think that problem is related to what the Venthyr are.
Basically their function, right?
Yeah, the Venthyr are... they're basically soul vampires. Like, they're vampires, but vampires that don't drain your blood. They drain you. Every mistake you ever made, every fault, every sin, they drain it out of you. They shrive you of you. And as a result, what's the thing that the entire message of the light is that there's one path. If there's one path, you know, you'd think they'd be okay with purifying people to pursue it, wouldn't you? I mean, that's the whole deal with Illidan. When Illidan destroys Zira, it's very much him saying, you know, I would do anything to defeat the Legion, but not this. You know, I won't let you take my scars. There's that whole idea of what makes you who you are. And that's a fascinating thing that I would like to see more about it. Like, we know that the origin of the Venthyr lies in Sire Denathrius himself. What made Sire Denathrius? What is he? That I don't think has been really... We don't know. We know that he's, you know, he's ancient and he's very much connected to Revendreth, but what is he?
Yeah, we don't know that about a lot of the coven leaders, right? Or the coven or progenitors, I guess I should say.
Yeah. We don't really know much of anything. Like, the one in Maldraxxus is missing and we don't know what happened to it. And there's others. I mean, what's the deal with the Archon? I mean, there's a lot, so... I do think that there's more to be seen. I definitely think it's Venthyr related. It's Venthyr specific. And I don't have a problem with saying that someone has weaponized the light. I mean, people weaponize the light all the time. The Nauru are all about it. I mean, we've seen huge light powered warships. So I don't have a problem with that, but I can't make that judgment right now. There's nothing in game yet that is making me think that there's a big, that someone's using the light to attack the Venthyr. I think the light is just there and it just hurts the Venthyr based on what I've seen. Maybe I could see something else and I change my opinion. It depends.
Yeah. And then the only thing that I really have to speculate on is just the way that the entire realm is made. So everything has a very distinct aesthetic or very distinct, feel to it as far as when you're going through it. So, like, Bastion feels like a land touched by the light, and when you go to a blighted area, you feel it. It's Ardenweald is a land eternally in twilight, and when you go to a darkened or off area, you feel it. Like, there's a very distinct tonal shift. Here, I don't know if I've, like, me personally, because I haven't done everything in there yet, I don't know if there is, like, a corrupted area, because the entire area is just mired in, like, this ever-present darkness of sin and depravity, the same thing that they're supposed to be cleansing souls of. And I think that because of that, because of that function, that way that functions is they're constructed in such a manner to live in that darkness, right?
Like, there's a whole thing about the whole idea of the Venthyr is that the Venthyr that you meet, aside from Denathrius, are people who went through the process.
Yeah, they've been reforged, and
then,
right?
And then they were given an option. Do you want to move? You can go back into the light and be judged, or you can stay here and be one of us and help us in our mission. So essentially, every Venthyr has been drained and then moves on to drain others. So it's very vampiric in terms of the metaphor of it. So I think that that's something to consider when you're dealing with Revendreth.
Yeah, and I think we'll find out more as time progresses as well. And I know it feels like such a cop out answer, but we don't know nearly enough yet. And I think that a lot of that will be revealed as we move through, as we learn more about Sire Denathrius and how the Venthyr are actually constructed and what actually happens to, you know, redeemed souls, aside from they are reforged into the Venthyr, which is all we know right now. So there's a ton of wiggle room, but I think it has something to do with that forging process and being built for that specific role. Because not everything there, I think, is tortured by the light, but not everything there is Venthyr, right? They're not all vampires. So I think that has something to do with it, but we'll see. We'll see what happens as we make our way further through that. Our next question comes from Braylin. Hello, Watchers. Braylin again, longtime patron supporter and human paladin from Deathicus here. Thanks for answering my question a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, I realized I was too clever by half and I ended up painting you into a corner while my actual ask was muddied. So I'm going to try again. Varian's death allowed for a ton of character development from other characters that were stagnating because he had a tendency to hog the spotlight. If he had retired, as Rossi suggested, we would not have had Gen finding a surrogate son to replace Liam, or Anduin finding a surrogate father to replace Varian. We might not have had the tension between Anduin and Sylvanas to such a degree, merely because Varian was still lurking in the wings. So at least in my opinion, his death opened up a ton of development for other characters whose relationships and personalities were underdeveloped because of his presence. Are there any other characters whose presence you feel limits the development of others, and if so, who might they be? I think that's a much better question than who needs to
die. I straight up don't agree with it.
I didn't agree
with it before. I wouldn't misunderstand you. Straight up, I don't agree with you. Now, you're right in that certain stories wouldn't happen if Varian were alive. That's a fair statement. I agree with that. I don't think that it means Varian is limiting the development of others. If they wanted to do a story where that implies that there's only one path to development for these characters. You could absolutely do a story with Varian still alive, where Anduin is doing stuff, where Gen is doing stuff. It doesn't have to be the same stuff. All the death of a character does allow you to do different things than if they were still alive. That part I will agree with. That doesn't necessarily mean that the things they do are necessarily the best thing you can do. And that's... I'll always be on the side of keeping characters around as much as possible. Like, very rarely do I feel like a character death is necessary in fiction like that.
Yeah.
There certainly are times, like, for instance, I'm just going to say it, the Joker in DC Comics, if he died and stayed dead long enough for some stories to happen, I would be absolutely thrilled. And I probably wouldn't be that bothered if Batman died. So... there are characters in fiction that I feel have that effect. Like, if Batman died and stayed dead for 10 years and other people had to replace him and deal with his legacy, you could have some really great stories. That's one of the reasons I'm really sad that they got rid of the multiverse for a while there and then brought it back, but now it's all messed up and doesn't make any sense. Because they had the Earth 2 Batman who had died.
Yeah.
And so everybody in that world had to deal without having their Batman. So his daughter had to become a crime fighter, and his adopted son, Dick Grayson, had to deal with, like, should I be Batman, or should I just stay Robin? What should I do with my life? And to me, the World of Warcraft setting isn't in a place where it has those characters yet, where they've been around for so long, and they've had such an impact that their deaths are necessary. Even Sylvanas, even Thrall, I don't feel like they're... And in fact, I feel like we're seeing with Thrall that you can do this in Warcraft. You can rotate characters in and out.
Yes.
and you can focus on certain characters and then focus on different characters, and you don't have to kill them off or remove them. I mean, even Medivh is still kind of around. I mean, yeah. there's actually, like, if you did Karazhan and Legion, Medivh is still sort of here, but he's not up front. And thus, the fact that he's not actually entirely dead doesn't really matter. It doesn't change the fact that Khadgar had to step up and try and replace him, and that Azeroth had to find a new way of defending itself. So I get what you're saying. I do understand it. It's not that I don't understand it. I don't agree with your basic premise.
Now,
and no amount of reworking the question is going to make me agree with the basic premise. I don't. There's no character that I feel like if they died, it would make the story better. I feel like it would make the story different.
Yeah, and I don't think I think that the evolution of the question or the meaning of the question wasn't necessarily so much if they died at this point. It's if like what you're saying, I think, is more akin to what Braylon was trying to get at, but I think oversimplified it. Idea of rotating people in and out to make way for other stories.
Let me put it to you this way. One of my favorite characters when I first played World of Warcraft was Cairn Bloodhoof. I loved Cairn. Like, Cairn made me play Horde. Like,
One of the greatest characters they've created.
I played Horde in vanilla. And people don't really understand this. They always think I hate the Horde. I never played Horde. But I did. I played Horde in vanilla. I loved playing Horde in vanilla. I loved my Tauren to the point where my Tauren is on a World of Warcraft TCG card. I loved him. And I loved playing him. And when Cairn died, yeah, it let Bane step up. And I like Bane. I think Bane's a great character. But it hurt me in ways I don't have an easy way to explain to you. It made playing Horde worse for me. Garrosh as a character is a very deep character, and there's a lot to him, and I think he's very interesting. But I did not want to play in a faction led by him. And the stuff he did as faction leader, I did not want a part of. And by the time that they had the rebellion against him at the end of Mists of Pandaria, I'd already checked out. And I really felt like, you know, if Cairn were alive now, if Cairn existed in this storyline, it could never have gone there. So if you want a character whose death did that kind of stuff, Cairn Bloodhoof is a character whose death made a lot of different stories possible. But it also meant that I didn't really want to play in the faction anymore. And that's something we have to consider with character death.
Now, this is not to interrupt you, but I just want to throw my two cents in here. I think that maybe the opposite is more true when it comes to Warcraft in particular, in which I don't think character death or character removal necessarily opens things up. I think, if anything, with the way characters are currently set up, it paints them into unintentional corners. And I think we see that sometimes with how certain things are presented. I think Thrall has escaped a lot of it just because he was allowed to step back and pivot because he wasn't integral to the story for so long. But even his removal painted Garrosh into a very specific direction. The idea of Varian's death painted Gen and Anduin into a very specific direction. I'm not saying these are unintentional. I'm not saying that these aren't planned. It's just
we're not even saying they're not good.
Right. And
again, the Gen Anduin stuff is actually pretty first rate. I like watching Gen and Anduin as a story. And for that matter, I think that a lot of the stuff they did with Garrosh was really interesting. And if they'd done it in a certain way, I probably would have wanted to stay Horde. But I didn't because of certain, like, I just have a certain, there's certain characters. Like if Cairn weren't dead, the Horde would be very different right now.
It would be.
And it's one of those things where, you know, did the Horde need to change? Maybe it did, you know? But a lot of us who played Horde in the beginning, we played Horde with a very specific mentality. It was very much
we're the misfits Warcraft. That band together.
Yeah, post-Warcraft 3. It was very much, you know, we're the ones who band together. We're the underdogs. The Horde of today is not the underdogs of anything.
No.
And it's a very different feeling. Is it worse? No. But it doesn't make it better either.
Yeah, and then, again, I just want to present it in a way that maybe consider the question in reverse. And again, it's not like when we talk about this type of stuff, we want to make sure that we're covering as completely as possible. But I think Matt is right about it, where we don't necessarily misunderstand your question in any capacity. It's we don't necessarily agree that anybody needs to back off or retire or rotate out at specific intervals. It's what does it serve to the story? And the thing that we have to keep in mind, too, is Warcraft, as much as we want it to be this immersive, ever-evolving world, and in some capacities it is, the story is being curated. And so anything that happens to these characters is being curated with a very specific goal in mind. Varian's death was specific, I believe, in facilitating exactly what you're talking about with Ghen and Anduin. Vol'jin's death was very specific, and even now he's back, and it was very likely from the very beginning his death was conceived for what we're about to do. Like, these are things that all serve a greater overarching narrative. Now, if you were talking about something a little bit more like a literary series or even a tabletop series, in which, and Matt and I think you've had experiences like this maybe in long-term campaigns in the past as well, sometimes characters do need to be removed from those to make way for others. It's almost like a level 20 character palling around with some level 12s. Eventually that level 20 character's got to go away for those 12s to get, you know, their time in the sun. It's not necessarily like that here. As much as we love this story, we are participants in something that's being predetermined. So you got to keep that in mind as well. So it's when you're asking this question, it's what story could be told that would facilitate the necessity of these people being removed? And I don't think that there is any specific indicators right now. And again, Matt can disagree with me, but I think you need to look at it from the different angle, not necessarily who would benefit from this person, you know, being removed, but does it serve the story?
I'm going to look right, like looking right now at this particular part of your question. Are there any other characters whose presence you feel limits the development of others? And if so, who might they be? Every character limits the development of others in some ways, because that's the nature of characters as they interplay. You can't name a character who doesn't limit other characters at the same time that they facilitate each other. I mean, that's the other thing, is characters facilitate each other. Having Anduin as leader of the Alliance facilitates a relationship with Sylvanas that you wouldn't get with Varian. Where Sylvanas would certainly still move against Varian, absolutely. She wouldn't look down on him the way she does on Anduin. She respected Varian. She didn't like him. They weren't friends. She would absolutely keep opposing him. And she would still plot against him.
Oh, absolutely.
But she respected him.
Yep.
She doesn't respect Anduin. And that's a different... It's a different relationship. That's... Each character has different relationships. And those relationships... It depends on what relationships you want to cultivate, which relationships you want to use for your storytelling. I'm not arguing that... The reason I can't really answer your question is because they all do. Like... All characters limit the development of others, because a limit is like, it's the boundaries in which something happens. It's the black lines you color in your coloring book. It's the direction your plant grows. It can only grow in so many directions. It can't simultaneously grow north and south at the same time. I mean, some plants can, and then they look really weird. But everything, you know, the flow of a river is controlled by its banks. That's the truth of every character interrelationship and interdynamic, is that dynamic shapes who the characters are. So there are certainly, like right now, imagine if they were to kill off Tyrande. I'm not saying they should. It's not saying I want this to happen. Absolutely, I'm not. But if Tyrande were to die, it would fundamentally change multiple characters. It would change Malfurion. It would change Maiev. It would change Chandris. It would change, like, you know, there's like, I mean, and you can think of, you'd have to sit and think about all the ways it would change them. Like, Malfurion would just go nuts. Like, I think we've seen enough that Malfurion is emotionally dependent on Tyrande on a deep, deep level, much more so than she is on him. She loves him, but she is not as dependent on him because she's had to not be. Over the past 10,000 years, she had to learn to do without him. Exactly. But he was asleep. He was asleep for all of it. He was not conscious, so he didn't develop that. He does not have that well of independence. A Tyrande who lost Malfurion would be deeply saddened. A Malfurion who loses Tyrande would be broken. And that's the difference. And that's one example of what I'm talking about when I'm saying all characters are. Because then look at Maiev. Maiev has defined herself in great deal to like what she lost to Tyrande and what her relationship with Tyrande has been. They've been rivals. They've been, you know, one has been the ruler of the other. They've been opposed. They've worked together. Maiev without Tyrande would suddenly have to face up to like an entire world where that person who stepped in and took the fate you thought you were going to have isn't there anymore. And we've seen that with Maiev and in Dilinan. You know, like what is she doing now? She does not know what to do with herself. And that's, these characters infect each other. They affect each other. They're part of each other. There's an old poem. I can't remember who this is by, so I apologize. But the line is, your absence has gone through me like thread through a needle. Everything I do is stitched with its color. That's, people are to each other. And that's what characters are to each other. So if you're looking for me to say a character that, you know, they should get rid of this character so other characters can change. No, because whether or not you get rid of characters, characters can always change. But absolutely every character can have that effect. Look at what happened to Alexstrasza in the Thrall Twilight of the Aspects book. Look what happened when she lost her current consort, Coriolis Strasz. Look at what's happened to her since. These characters affect each other, and they do change the story when they're gone. But any character does that. So that's why I can't sit here and pick out, you know, if Varian had stayed alive and Anduin had died, can you imagine what Varian would be like right now?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that every character is interwoven to some point, and no matter what happens, as far as we're concerned, and I think this is safe for saying for both of us, there isn't anybody that we would remove or that we see as a roadblock for somebody else, because everybody is interlaced between each other. Those relationships are what help the story along. They are part and parcel with it. So I think that answers that question as thoroughly as we can.
No, I actually have more. I'm going to say this too. Because World of Warcraft as a setting is about 20, 25 years old at this point. I mean, the Warcraft setting is in its 20s. It is much more developed than some, and much less developed than others. The Marvel Comics universe has been around since the 1960s. Some of the characters from DC Comics have been published for almost 100 years at this point. We are heading up, like, Superman will be 100 within, like, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Warcraft is unique in that it is both extremely expansive and still fairly young. It's much more expansive than, say, I'm going to use another example from video games. It's much more expansive than Greyhawk, which is much older. But it's much less expansive than the Forgotten Realms, which is a little bit older. And these settings all have characters that that can get replaced, that get, you know, taken away, and they don't make it. They don't prevent the character from developing. They just change the way it develops, and that's what I really want to be like. That's my emphasis here. The characters don't prevent other characters from developing. They just change the way they're developing. And in the case of Warcraft, I don't feel like any character in Warcraft is detrimental to the development of other characters. Can that happen? I suppose it can, if certain characters get all the spotlight. But we've seen what happens in WoW. That doesn't happen because characters, if anything, people are like, how come this character wasn't involved in this? Like right now, people are like, why isn't Khadgar doing anything? And the real answer to why isn't Khadgar doing anything is that they don't feel like there's any point to him being involved.
Yeah.
It won't make the story any better.
They have what they need right now.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that's a fascinating way to look at it. There is a mechanism in the game for characters to be put to the spotlight that doesn't require the removal of other characters. But that doesn't mean it'll never come. And it doesn't mean that when it does happen, it isn't interesting and doesn't provide opportunity. I'm not trying to say that. But here's an example. What's really come upon the death of Tyrion Fordring?
Nothing as of yet.
So sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it can, but Tyrion Fordring's death hasn't really... It's one thing that the death of Tyrion Fordring has allowed. It's allowed paladins to fight paladins. Because when Tyrion Fordring was around, the idea of paladins fighting paladins wouldn't have been allowed. So that's something I wanted to get in there. That there are sometimes the development doesn't happen.
All right. Well, again, I think that's been a very thorough answer. Our next question comes from our friend Underbash. Hello, lore watchers. In the first couple quests in Hyjal, Ysera said that the rift that weakens the boundaries of Azeroth also hastened the return of the Ancients. With what we know about Ardenweald, that got me thinking. We don't really know how old the Shadowlands are, right? But the Elemental Plane was created to imprison the Elemental Lords. If their incursion into Azeroth somehow had an effect on the return of the Ancients, do you think that maybe when the Elemental Plane was created, it was tied in some capacity to the Shadowlands? Thanks and keep doing what you do. We know to a certain effect that they were, right? And we know that that was because the Elemental Planes were prisons that were created by Helya. And where did she get the idea for this? By looking into the Shadowlands. I forgot the exact point where we're pretty much shown, like, told that. But there are, that's where the idea basically comes from. You can, that she learned that she could create pocket dimensions. And that's what they are, right? They're these little pocket planes of existence that she created as prisons for specifically these elementals.
I'm going to actually say that I don't think there's anything that specifically says what you just said. It's just very easily inferable from what we do know about Helya. We know that Helya and Rhaadan worked together to create the elemental planes. We know that Helya was an expert in the Shadowlands and could reach into them. Because that's how Odin got to look into them. It was Helya that brought him into communication with whatever he communicated with that made him the deal to make the Valkyr. That was all Helya. So we know that all the pieces you just said are there. I don't think there's anything that ever specifically says Helya got the idea for the elemental. First off, because she didn't have the idea for the elemental planes. Rhaadan did.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
She helped Rhaadan do it. She didn't do it. But that being said, everything you said is there to imply it. There is connections between all those moments. And what's really interesting about that to me is we know that Helya was opposed to the creation of the Valkyr.
Yeah.
And Odin did it anyway, and in fact did it to her. Which is possibly one of the reasons that she's working with the jailer now. She's, you know, bitter and angry about that whole thing. But what's really interesting is, like, what, when they made the elemental planes, where did, like, since it was Rhaadan's idea, how much of it did he leave to her? Like, was he a concept guy? Was he one of those people who's like, we should build places that are like entire universes, but trapped, you know, and then just leave it to her to do? And she's like, okay.
Or was it something he couldn't touch because he was a Titan?
Maybe. Well, you know, he was a Titan forged, like, well, her. Yeah,
Titan forged.
He was an actual watcher. I don't think she was. But regardless, like, we don't know. There's a lot we don't know here, but there's interesting possibilities to the idea that the elemental planes are in some way hooked into the structure of the Shadowlands, or at least the structure of the cosmos of which the Shadowlands is one part. Because we know there's other planes of existence besides the Shadowlands, too. We know that there's the Twisting Nether, which we've gone into and out of all the time, and that's another realm of existence. We know that there's the plane that the Titan's souls seem to have come from, that's a realm of pure arcane energy. Is it possible this goes wider than just the Shadowlands? Like, was all, when those structures began to go, did they begin to pull in other stuff too, and not just the Shadowlands? There's a lot to it. I do find myself wondering about that. Rhaadan and Odin were pretty big rivals.
Yeah.
And the idea that Rhaadan is the one who wanted to do it first, was Odin trying to get an end run around it? Like, there's a lot to it here.
And it would make sense, too, because it seems, at least with the Valkyr and with what Odin wanted to do, basically circumvent the whole system of death, that seems like almost like a direct response of, oh, they can create prison planes. Oh, if Rhaadan knows about this, and I know about this, this is what they're trying to do, well, what if I do this? So maybe there's something there, but I'm sure we're going to find out a little bit more about it, because there is reference to elementals in Shadowlands as you're moving through things. They're here and there. They're not exactly like thrown in your face, but there is the potential that we will discover more, because especially elementals are beings that consume spirit, and spirit is essentially anima, and that is all what the Shadowlands is all about. So there's very, if we go by that logic, there's probably going to be a link at some point that we're going to discover, or that's going to be talked about. I would be very surprised if there is not.
Well, plus, I mean, another thing to think about while we're talking about this, Helya trapped Odin in the Halls of Valor using the same method.
Yep.
And he couldn't get out. Like, he could send himself into Azeroth.
He could project, but that was
he couldn't. Yeah, he couldn't leave. And that's interesting to me, because the rift created by, you know, the rift that weakened the boundaries of Azeroth thing, that there's a lot to this. There's a lot going on here that I really would like to hear more about. Like, Hyjal and the importance of Hyjal predated the Well of Eternity being placed there. Hyjal and Zandalar were these two mountains that apparently a lot of the Loa and wild gods used as homes. They were the places that they went back to when they got back from Ardenweald. And that's interesting to me. Like, how does that, like, we have these connections between Azeroth and Azeroth's natural world and the Emerald Dream, which existed before it was shaped by, you know, the Titans. There was the Emerald Dream still existed as kind of Azeroth's something, kind of like its unconscious or what have you. And that connects to Ardenweald. What is, does that make Ardenweald like the reflection of the Emerald Dream? Like, are they sister realms? And if they are, is one the living one and one the dead one? Like, how do you pass from one to the other?
Especially when we're being told that the Emerald Dream was conceived as a backup copy for Azeroth. Is that a lie? Is that misinformation? We know that that's,
or is something... that just what the Titans made out of it?
Or exactly, or is that the Titans' interpretation of it? And we know that the Titans can be unreliable narrators, as we've seen countless times between Loken and that whole thing. But
And I'm not even talking about
stuff's
that.
Not
though.
But I'm just saying, like, their stuff's not immutable. So even if they had an idea of it, did they know what they were looking at? And if they did, was it intentionally not told to us what it was to keep us from mucking about with it?
And that's interesting, and certainly not to be dismissed either. But I mean, even if you assume that they weren't bullshitting us, sorry that we got one.
That's the one.
But even if we assume that they weren't just covering their butts, they weren't just giving us something that we would understand. They found something and tried to make something else out of it, because that's kind of what they do.
Yep.
They try to impose order on things. But if the Emerald Dream and Ardenweald are fundamentally connected, you might not be able to impose order on it. You know, it transcends life and death, you know, and one, you know, if the Ardenweald is the necessary shadow, the winter court to the summer court of the Emerald Dream, you know, to use fae stuff, because we know the night fae are in Ardenweald. Does that mean there's day fae in the Emerald Dream? We've not actually been there yet.
We've been in a piece of it briefly.
Yeah, but we've been in like little pockets of it. The places we've been that have been part of the Emerald Dream aren't necessarily the Emerald Dream.
And the interesting thing that you know, now that I'm thinking about it, and this is totally just out of left field, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you mentioned something that just made me remember the original artwork for the Emerald Dream way back in vanilla.
Like, all those weird faces?
Ardenweald. It looks a lot like Ardenweald. And yes, that could be an effect of, you know, the art team, you know, updating stuff from the archives. But that would be a really interesting thread if what you're saying is absolutely true. And the Emerald Dream was modeled after Ardenweald, you know, for whatever capacity.
We're not even modeled after. What if the two places have always been, no, not copy
of. Or always existed, yes.
But just imagine you've got, like, when you go up to a mirror and you move your hand, the hand and the reflection hand moves in the same, you know, direction. Like, you in the mirror, you can't, did you create the reflection? It's a reflection of you. Like, that's what gets me about this. Like, there's so much we don't know about the Emerald Dream. Like, we know that, you know, A&R attempted to shape it, but we know that it existed before A&R, you know, and Freya. Freya's the one who actually did it on Azeroth. She's the keeper that did most of the work on it. But we know it existed beforehand. So what really is it? Like, the Titans tried to use it as a backup copy, but is that what it was intended to be? Or is that just their attempt to make use of it? Is it like... This is the problem with when we make it too much of a computer metaphor for these kind of things. It's not a constructed system. It's based on a being that was already there,
mm-hmm.
and already growing, and it's really fascinating. I do definitely think you're right about Ardenweald. Looks like the art from, like, especially from, do you remember, like, when people were first going to the Emerald Dream on days?
I spent a lot of time in GM Island because I could pop it in there.
Yeah. That's what interests me about this. If they're deliberately designing Ardenweald to look like the Emerald Dream on purpose to emphasize the connection between them, that means that down the road we could end up going to the Emerald Dream.
Which would be really interesting, especially with, and this is mild spoilers, we're at the end of the show. If you made it this far, congratulations. Especially with Ysera being in Ardenweald and being important to that story, and even with her saying, like, oh, I'm going to be here for a while. Okay, that's cool, but that could have other connotations. And with what we do to, like, get her to emerge from her little wild seed, like, there is some other interesting connotations there, because what we're doing is purging her nightmare. What did we do when we were in the pockets of the Emerald Dream? We were purging the nightmare. There are a lot of parallels there that could potentially be pulled on. And I would love, absolutely love, to explore more of, you know, the Emerald Dream and find out where it connects, what its purposes were, if what we were told is actually true, or if it's more grand than that. If it was us getting an interpretation of a system that the Titans had never seen before and have just, you know, it's like seeing something for the first time and just pulling something out of your rear end of, oh, yeah, this is clearly what it does, which... Who knows? That could have been exactly what they did. You know, there's so much potential here for some really cool offshoot stories during or after Shadowlands that I am absolutely here for it. So I don't, is there anything else you want to add on that one?
No, because as you pointed out to me before, I was going on and on and on about the last thing. So I don't want to keep doing that.
But that's okay.
Hit my one button, but I don't need to have like three questions where I don't shut up for an hour.
But that's okay, because I think we are out of time here. So Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. Again, if you have questions for the show, please feel free to send them in to us. You can email them at podcast@BlizzardWatch.com. You could also send them to us on our Discord. We do have our patron and supporters chat, patron and supporters questions for the podcast and queue, as well as the queue questions. Feel free to drop them in there. And for anybody who we didn't get to your questions this week, don't worry, we will save them for our next show. But thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.